Hi, this is John Semper Jr., the head writer and producer of Spider-Man the Animated Series, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
I'm back!
Welcome to ToonCast Beyond here on the GeekCast Radio Network. I'm, of course, TFG1 Mike. Joining me this time for the second take for this episode, because recording issues of 2016 was a horrible year, folks, for technology and elections and all that and everything else, whatever. Is Eduardo, hello, sir.
Hey, well, hopefully this one will work better than our last time.
Yes, hopefully.
Because we're in 2017.
Yes.
There's no way the bad luck can continue.
Yes. And we are here to talk about Spider-Man the Animated Series, Season 2 this time. This year is 25th anniversary of a lot of things for 1992. Batman the Animated Series, X-Men the Animated Series, which we will be doing in about 20 podcasts or so. So Eduardo will be back for more X-Men as well from the 1992 X-Men series. What I find ironic about all these 25th anniversaries of 1992 is I can also tie Melrose Place into that. So Melrose Place, Batman the Animated Series, X-Men. 1992 was also the year The Cosby Show ended. So it's been 25 years since The Cosby Show ended. But we are here to talk about cartoons. We're here to talk about
Spider-Man. Not feeling old. We're not feeling old. Nope. Nope, not feeling old. Nope.
You know what the sad thing is? Somebody on Facebook, I think I said this last time. I might have said this with Joe, or I might have said it to Steve Megatron on a different podcast. Somebody said in 3 years, the 90s will be 30 years old. And I said, you know what that means, right? In 3 years, the 80s will be 40 years old.
No, not thinking about it. No. As is, we've got stuff that's celebrating 25 years. But this year will be the 30th anniversary of G.I. Joe the movie.
Yeah, that's very, very
true.
So
it's like, wow, you know, it's just, again, trying not to feel old. Nope.
I've just accepted it. I you know, it's like, why the hell try to fight it? It's like, I know I'm getting old. So, as I said, we're here to talk about Spider-Man the Animated Series, Season 2. It's comprised up of 14 cartoons this season. I think I mentioned this last time when we did Season 1. I love about Spider-Man the Animated Series is John Semper Jr., his team, the voice actors, the writers, all that stuff, they were able to fit all of the Spider-Man stories in that they wanted to within a 65-episode run. For all five seasons of this show equal out to 65 episodes. So you think about this. That's 1994. So if they're producing this maybe on the late side of 1992 and all of 1993, you know how it is. Remember when you saw those Thundercats outtakes that we were never supposed to see about the voice actors? What the fuck is a samoflange?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
I remember when I interviewed Larry Kenney a couple of times, he was saying they were in production for that kind of stuff. They were doing the voice like 1983, 1984. So obviously the production of things happens, you know, it's kind of like podcasting, you know, we'll record 4 or 5 episodes of a podcast or 9 or 10 episodes of a podcast and then we'll release it, you know, 2 or 3 months later or whatever. What I find interesting about Spider-Man Animated Series is that, as I said, the 65 episodes for all 5 seasons, technically that's season 1 of He-Man from the 80s because you know, back then, first run syndication, 65 episodes is that magic number for, and I just absolutely love looking back through some of the Spider-Man the Animated Series episodes, and as we're progressing through this series, it's like, I have never forgotten a lot of these stories. Like, you know, you say you watch a cartoon 20 or 30 years ago when you're a kid, and you maybe go back to it once or twice in that 20 or 30 year time span, and you sometimes remember it, you may not remember it, or you remember certain episodes that you absolutely love. As I'm watching through this series again, I remember every single major moment. Like when Madame Web first shows up,
yeah.
You know, when Alistair Smythe's dad's fate was revealed, Rob Paulsen as Hydro-Man. You know, I mean, I remember all that stuff. The Mutant Agenda and Mutant Revenge. Like, hello, it's Spider-Man and the X-Men. Yep. You know, I mean, I remember playing...
Well, that's one of the great things about having two Marvel shows on the same Saturday morning network.
Absolutely. I mean,
you could have them... I remember the commercials, and it's like, Spider-Man and the X-Men together for the first time, and it's like, wow.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I remember playing the video game at the time. You know, Spider-Man and the X... You know, it's like... You know, I think I saw the Mutant Agenda, Mutant Revenge, the two-parter there. I think I saw that before I played the Spider-Man and the X-Men video game. But again, it's, you know, that's what I loved about the Marvel animation of the 90s. It got me into doing things or reading comics or whatever on the Marvel side. You know, the whole time I'm watching X-Men the Animated Series, the whole time I'm watching, I want to go to Walden Books. I want to go to certain other bookstores that don't exist anymore to get comics to see what I'm missing out on. And, you know, it's like, you know, certain things with Batman the Animated Series or Justice League or Batman Beyond kind of thing. Like, I absolutely love a lot of the Batman Beyond comics that the DC has done over the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 years and things like that. So yeah, the fact that a cartoon that most people that I know really, really don't... There's a few select people that I've known the last 5 or 6, 7, 8, 9 years really don't like this series. And I just don't get it, because to me, this is a classic Spider-Man series. And I even talked to John Semper Jr. And, you know, he basically said, hey, look, you know, I wanted to recapture the Spider-Man stories from when I was a kid, so I wanted to be able to capture that style with telling interesting stories and taking various stories from various things, and that's what you get here, and it's awesome. So season two, we're going to start with the characters for season two, because a lot of characters came in this season. We've got Baron Mordo and Dormammu. We've got Carnage coming in. We get the return of Venom, I think, in this. Is it this one?
I think you're doing season three.
Yeah. Yeah, that's season three. So, okay, yeah. I'm getting ahead of myself here, folks. In this one, like I said, we get the Mutant's Revenge. We got Morbius is introduced. Punisher makes an appearance for two episodes. Blade the Vampire Hunter, which that's the first time I had ever heard as a kid in the 90s. First time I ever heard about Blade is this series. Never even knew about it before that. Before this animated series, and obviously once the film came out, I'm like, oh, hey, Wesley Snipes is Blade. That works. Now, this season is where they kind of started, and this is what I like about it. I love the way they set this up. Each chapter, each season has an overall chapter prefix to it. So this season two is the Neogenic Nightmare saga, and just absolutely love that. What were some of your favorite characters that you saw in season two?
Oh man! Well, first off, I loved the X-Men team up. Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool. Loved David Warner as the villain, Langdon. I also liked the Punisher's appearance, the Punisher's two episode appearance, especially because we're dealing with a Saturday morning cartoon, and this is the 90s, so of course you had the parental groups and the censors and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So Punisher had to do the whole laser thing, but I gotta give the team credit that they actually came up with a reason behind it. That it isn't just sort of, well, everybody uses lasers in this universe. there was actually an explanation. It was Punisher's sidekick hacker friend Microchip saying, yeah. "Hey Frank, how about just this one time, you know, we kind of let the guy live, okay? Just capture him, no blowing him away, and you know." And Punisher being like, all right, fine. fine. I can't kill him this time. All right, fine. This one time. Grumble, grumble, grumble. You know, you talked earlier about these cartoons getting you into comics. I gotta feel sorry for some parent that watches his kid watching Spider-Man, and then it's like, oh, you like that Punisher character? Let's go find you some comics. And then seeing the Punisher comics and being like, wait a minute! Wait, yeah. It's not supposed to be like that. What the heck?
Yeah.
What the heck? Why is he using a machine gun on these people?
Well, you know, and that's kind of the same way with the X-Men, too. I mean, the X-Men... And let's face it, I think anything when it comes to comic books of the origins of, the early days of comics when they first started, it's basically... For me, it's the Looney Tunes rule, okay? The creators of Looney Tunes have said, Chuck Jones, before he passed, in interviews that have been on YouTube and whatever else, he said, you know, we weren't making these for children. We were making these for us. The same rule applies to DC, Marvel, whomever. Like, I remember as a 13, 14-year-old kid, 1993, 1994, I don't remember what story it was, but I read one of the most violent Batman trade paperbacks. I don't remember which story it was, but it scared, as a 13, 14-year-old kid, scared the living crap out of me. Yeah, I can imagine, you know, parents back in the 90s, you know, going to, like I said, Walden Books or wherever.
Borders.
I don't know if Books a Million was around in the early 90s, but, you know, going to bookstores, going to comic shops and saying, hey, is it okay for my kid to read The Punisher? No, it is not.
Hey, what's this book with the smiley face button? Should I give this to my 10-year-old?
Yeah, exactly. For me, when it comes to characters for season 2, obviously, still absolutely love Peter / Spider-Man. Love, don't get me wrong, folks, and we're going to do some of the other Spider-Man series throughout. Once we get through this series, which, in my personal opinion... The opinions of TF2 and Mike do not reflect the opinions of the Geekcast Radio Network. All that disclaimer bullshit. My personal opinion, this is my favorite. This is my GOAT. Spider-Man the Animated Series, 1984. It's my number one. I like a lot of the other Spider-Man cartoons, but this is what I kind of grew up on. I had seen episodes of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, and I love Dan Gilvezan. I love Bumblebee as Spider-Man and all that and everything else, because for me, he was Bumblebee first, because I had only seen bits and pieces of Spider-Man. So, you know, for me, you know, this is one of those things where 1984 is the ultimate, no pun intended, Spider-Man series for me. And we are going to go through Spectacular. We are going to go through other variations of the characters animated, you know, legacy here, but this to me is what I want in a Spider-Man cartoon. So Christopher Daniel Barnes, to me, in this series, he is the ultimate voice of Peter / Spider-Man. He worked these scripts so well. Like, when we get to the next week, when we talk about season 3, you know, by the end of season 3, that guy's vocal cords must have been just screaming at him for a lot of the emotion that he had to put into Peter Parker. But, you know, here, you know, season 1, which we already talked about, here in season 2, the emotion is still kind of, it hasn't boiled over yet. He has the emotions. He's more doing more of the quips than anything else in season 2. My buddy JT from Saskatoon, who lives up there in Canuckville in Canada, I posted that I was watching this to refresh and so we could get these episodes of the podcast recorded. And he's like, oh, yeah, I remember when Morbius was coming in, and I, you know, I was expecting Morbius, the living vampire. So he posts a picture of the Morbius living. And he's like, yeah. Sadly, I was disappointed and got this. And
well, again, we're talking Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
And you got the parental groups and the censors. Do you really need, like, you know, this... the living vampire version, you know, biting somebody's neck and, you know, with, like, you know, a little blood trickling from that. You really think that could have flown? I mean, hey, I get what you're, I get what your friend from the north, I get where he's coming from.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Also, you know, also it's at the same time, we're dealing with different set of rules here.
Yeah.
Although, man, you could probably do a drinking game and die of liver failure from all the times cartoon Morbius was like, I need plasma.
Yeah.
And they did a, you know, they did a close up shot of his palm with, like, the little weird lamprey thing in the middle.
Yeah.
I'm sure Vampire Hunter D was talking to his hand and going, I need my lawyer.
I need Matt Murdock.
He's coming. He's coming.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I know. But like, there are certain Spider-Man villains that I've just grown to the point of, oh my god, why him? Why did they do this? Why? Not with this series, but since this series, because I felt at the time that what they did with certain characters in this series was the end-all, be-all. Like, I remember the very first time I read the Kevin Smith Daredevil thing, one of his very first, Guardian Devil, okay? I remember when I'm reading that comic. Yeah, so and this was like 2 or 3 or 4 years. This was recently. This is within the last 5 years. Like when I first started doing the pull bag and started looking for comics from Marvel and things like that. It was before, right before I got into digital comics. It was still when I was in print comics. I read that story and I'm like, okay. Wait, really? Seriously? Fucking Kevin Smith, you're really going to make Mysterio the fucking villain of the Daredevil? Really? What the hell is wrong with... Kevin Smith of the 90s, View Askew, all that, great, fine. Kevin Smith today, fuck that guy. I can't... I don't enjoy anything that guy has done in the last 10 years.
Well, To be fair, though... his work recently, directing some of the CW DC stuff, has been really good.
You know, they made a big deal about Supergirl Lives, which came out a week ago, so it's all right that we can kind of spoil it here. Supergirl Lives was the first episode of Supergirl for the new year, first episode of the second season of Supergirl on the CW. And they made a big deal. He made a big deal of, oh, hey, guess what? Harley Quinn Smith, my daughter, is going to be in the episode and everything else. And I liked that episode and all that. I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. My favorite part of that entire episode, yellow sun grenade. Because the first thing I thought of was the Hereafter two-parter from Justice League. When Superman goes into the future and finds Vandal Savage, and Savage, you have a portable yellow sun. Oh yeah, I tried working on that about 25 years ago, but I never could get it right. You know, so as soon as I saw the yellow sun grenade, I'm like, oh my god, that's so cool, because it reminded me of that thing. Which, you know, so I like that part of the episode. I like that they're slowly building the Maggie Alex relationship thing. That's great, but like, with the way Kevin talks about it on social media, oh, they're, you know, letting me do this because they're, you know, paying tribute to something I wrote that never actually got made and blah, 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 blah. But the overall story of the episode wasn't that great. It was just a random damn villain. To me, it was. You know, somebody else, it might not be that, but that's, you know. But, I don't know.
Well, no, it's... Hey, that's fair. I mean, I liked the episode. I know the villain they use, Roulette. I thought it was cool that they brought her in. You know, it set the seeds for some stuff that kind of has me raising my eyebrow and going, what could this mean? And I also like that Kevin Smith had his daughter in the episode, but it wasn't one of these things of, hey, look,
it's my daughter.
It's my daughter. Yeah, you know, she's got acting chops. Yeah. I mean, she's got some acting chops.
Yeah,
it wasn't a Jay and Silent Bob cockknocker moment. Hey, kids, look, Mark Hamill applause. Yeah. You know, it wasn't one of those. So I will say that anytime Kevin's doing something for the CW or for what, you know, that's fine. I'm saying for me personally, anything he has done in the last 10 years that he has created, that he, like, Red State's not my thing. I don't care about his Evenings With anymore. I just don't care. I tried watching Jay and Silent Bob, Super Groovy Cartoon Movie. I've grown out of all of that kind. I don't know what the hell it is. I just grown past all that humor. So getting back to Spider-Man here.
this is a podcast episode about a Spider-Man cartoon.
Yes. Long tangent over. Sorry, folks, but that's, you know, podcasting. You know, we tend to go on tangents here.
I've gone on tangents just while chilling out with friends at dinner. So
yeah, exactly. But you know, getting back to my original point about, you know, Mysterio or whatever else, there are certain Spider-Man villains that I just have to groan every time, like, oh god, it's that guy. Oh, and the reason I do that is because I've already seen, in my personal opinion, I've already seen the best version of that character, which was in this series. Like, yeah. I'm sure JT, if he's hopefully listening to this, I'm gonna piss him off for this, but he's Canadian, so it doesn't matter. I don't give a crap about reading Morbius the Living Vampire. I'll probably give it a try eventually, but like, this to me, I always thought the Morbius episodes, until he kind of finally goes good later, the beginning of the Morbius episodes, I always found the Morbius character to be creepy even before he got transformed. Like, I just felt like he was stalking Felicia Hardy. he just had that creeper vibe to me. And as everyone knows, I have a secret crush on Felicia Hardy from the series because it's Jennifer Hale as the voice of Felicia Hardy, and that sexy Black Cat voice is just amazing, even though she's not Black Cat yet. Oh boy. So yeah, obviously, like I said, I love Christopher Daniel Barnes, Spider-Man Peter Parker. J. Jonah Jameson Asner in this season, he's getting a hell of a lot of great stuff. Love Robbie Robertson. MJ's story is kind of like, I mean, it picks up at the end of this and it goes into season 3, which we'll talk about next week, but I don't know what it was, and maybe I should go back and ask John Semper Jr. I'm not sure. Maybe I have to go back and listen to that old interview from 2014 when we celebrated 20 years of the series. But MJ just seemed like she was there this season. It didn't seem like they were doing too much with her. Maybe that's because they were focusing on Spidey and his mutation disease and all that. So I don't know.
That might be what it is.
Yeah, because like they have like the third episode, they have the Hydra Man thing with, you know, Bench and all that, and after that they basically go right into Mutant Agenda, Mutant Revenge, and then Morbius, and then Punisher and all that.
I've never been so frightened in my life.
I need to do more tests to be sure. But your DNA may have mutated permanently. You're changing into something that won't be human.
Gotta find a cure. There's one man who might help me. People say he's the world's greatest expert on genetic mutations. Danger! But I don't see any... Okay, Spidey. Next time, use the front door.
Well, what do you know? Put out flypaper, catch a spider. Make one wrong move. Please. And you're shish kebab.
Some of my favorite episodes from season two, I really enjoyed pretty much what I've already kind of mentioned here. The Insidious Six part one and two kind of thing, Battle of the Insidious Six part two. I enjoyed that. That was interesting because how often do we have, you know, villain team-ups in cartoons? We have them all the time, but again, these are all, you know, classic Spider-Man villains.
Yeah, I would still love to know, though, how is it that the X-Men cartoon can get away with having a villain called Mr. Sinister? Uh-huh. And with the Spider-Man cartoon, they can't call the group the Sinister Six. We have to call it the Insidious Six. It's like, okay, all right. You know, I would just love to know why the name change. Why is it that with Spider-Man they couldn't use the word Sinister?
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I mean, Insidious is still very evil sounding.
We can still tell that the group is full of not nice people.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I know the first time we tried to record season two, mm-hmm. One of the things we talked about is where could Spidey's team up with the X-Men fit as far as the X-Men cartoon? And I did say that for my two cents, that it probably fits between season two and season three. Like right
of
the Phoenix
of X-Men,
saga.
Because
that's about the only place where you could have everybody there.
Yeah,
because couldn't be season two because Professor Xavier was missing in the Savage Land. Couldn't be like deep in season three because you had the whole Phoenix saga. So it probably takes place right before season three.
Yeah,
kind of in that area.
Yeah, because they're really not doing anything when Spider-Man shows up in the Mutant Agenda Part One. The X-Men are just kind of chilling out. They're not, resting up from Savage Land battles or whatever. What I love about that two-parter, Mutant Agenda and Mutant's Revenge, is how Spidey and Wolverine got to interact. Oh, I loved it. I thought it was so great. You got Cathal J. Dodd voicing Wolverine. You got Christopher Daniel Barnes voicing Peter Parker. And it was just amazing because we all know in this series, if you push Peter a little bit too much when he's under the mask there, he'll push back and, you know.
Whoa! Huh? Guess the ride's over.
Not for you, it ain't.
Enough!
What do you want here?
I came to see you, Professor Charles Xavier. So that's it. I'm mutating. Into what? I don't know. Can you cure me?
I'm sorry, Spider-Man. My work is not to cure mutants. I've built this complex, this school, to train them. I help them accept who and what they are.
Accept it? But I don't want to be a freak.
Watch your mouth, pal. Being a mutant's a gift.
Well, what if this gift turns me into some kind of eight-legged monster?
I wish I had an answer for you. I am sorry for your pain.
Don't worry about my pain. Worry about yours. If I mutate into a dangerous creature, and you have to stop me. It's always the same. I can save the world 10 times over, but when I need help, I'm on my own. Thanks for nothing.
At this point in his story, he thinks that Xavier can help him cure his mutation disease. Now, in Spider-Man's case, you know, speaking about him and speaking about how Professor Xavier, you know, his main thing is, we help mutants accept their gifts. I'm sorry, turning into a giant man-spider ain't no fucking mutant gift, Professor X. Yeah, that's a damn disease.
You know, it's... I think I kind of get... I mean, first of all, I do understand... Like, it's one of those things where I don't side with any one particular person in this argument.
Right.
I see what Peter's going through, and then I also understand what Professor Xavier's going through because... you know, if you, you know, if like, yeah, let's say he goes, okay, we'll help cure you, Spider-Man, so you don't turn into a six-armed giant spider thing. You know, what's to prevent somebody from being like, what's to prevent Cyclops from going, you know what? The hell with this, man. I want regular eyes. You know, I don't want to wear funky sunglasses anymore. You know, what the hell, Professor? It's like, you know, what everybody keeps calling me Blues Brother when I walk into the room, okay? I'm a little tired of that. I mean, you kind of it's one of those slippery slope kind of things. It's like I kind of get where Professor Xavier's going with it.
Yeah.
You know, don't exactly agree, but I also see that it's like, well, if you do one, what's to prevent you from doing the other?
Right, yeah, exactly.
And do you really want to go down that road? So it's like, look, we're not in the habit of curing. I mean, I suppose that, yeah, you could, you know, there's like some sort of middle ground there, but, you know, I mean, just, again, I don't think Xavier's, I see where Xavier's coming from, even if I don't agree with it 100%.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But just seeing the interaction between Spider-Man and Wolverine and seeing the two worlds kind of collide, I mean, hell, even just seeing Spider-Man in the Danger Room, that was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice. I come to the peaceful countryside, and I wind up in the Pentagon.
Stop him!
Whoa, close. Even closer. Gotta pick a door. Any door. New rule. Never visit the Pentagon without a roadmap. Who were those clowns anyway?
He's in the Danger Room.
Bad news. I was in there practicing. I left it on.
What program was running?
Deadly Sentinels.
My spider sense is going crazy. Okay. So I'm gonna be a little late getting home.
Heads up, guys!
Power of lightning, strike again!
Power of web shooters, get real sticky!
I'm supposed to keep a boy interested if y'all keep scaring him away.
Sorry, mon frere, but Gambit see no future for you in the past.
So, another one I liked from season two was the Tablet of Time episodes. The Tablet of Time and Ravages of Time. Because we have this whole Silvermane story and time travel and all
and
that.
That's like one of those that they almost lifted completely from the comics.
Yeah.
They I think there was like a couple of participants that got swapped in and out.
Yeah.
But still, the fact you're able to lift that idea.
Yeah, because in most of, and I don't care what anyone says right now about Wikipedia, but they have references here saying which episodes are based on which comics. And part one, Tablet of Time, is based on Amazing Spider-Man number 73. Part two, which is Ravages of Time, is 74 and 75. So if I had to pick an episode that I just don't really care about out of season two, it's probably the two that I really just didn't really get into is Hydro Man. It's an okay episode, but it does. It's not like, you know, that to me is like a one-off for this series, which is really weird to see a one-off. And then Streak of the Vulture.
As Hydro-Man, I thought it was a cool little episode, and yeah, it's a one-off, but sometimes you kind of need a one-off just to give like a break in the proceedings.
Yeah.
And kind of give people a chance to catch their breath, and it was interesting what they did with Hydro Man, how they gave him a backstory and they made him into like a Mary Jane stalker.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, Rob Paulson is Hydro Man.
That part is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rob Paulsen as Hydra-Man, that part is awesome. But I'm saying, like, the way the story, the way that they're structuring these stories to run into each other, to have chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, chapter 3, just like, somebody's stuck out there in left field. Something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then Shriek of the Vulture, I'm not a fan of the Vulture character. I've never been a fan of the Vulture character.
Well, I know around this time in the 90s, they tried to kind of give Vulture a little bit of a freshening up by, you know, giving him the thing where he, like, he has to drain life force to remain young. So, you know, at least they're, and I see that they did have a little bit of that in the cartoons, so.
Yeah, they did. Well, the thing with draining the life force, that was how he was getting his powers, that's how he was getting his youth. And then he goes to drain Spider-Man's powers, which actually drained Spider-Man's mutation. So that's how they were able to save Spider-Man from the mutation. And that's one of the reasons why I do like... I'm just saying the character itself is just not one of my favorite Spider-Man villains. I do enjoy the episode for the simple fact that we finally get, within one season, instead of having to drag out the Man-Spider mutation crap, we finally get that Dr. Kurt Connors could leave the mutated DNA inside Vulture and basically ruin his life and leave Spider-Man, you know, to be who he is.
Now, question for you. I mean, have you ever... I know in the comics they did have Spider-Man have, like, the six arms for a while.
Right.
Did you ever see, like, the comic version of that?
No, I've not.
Okay, because it's kind of ironic that they had Morbius running around this season. Mm-hmm. Because in the comics, Morbius was the key to Spider-Man losing that mutation in the comics.
Oh,
you actually had six-armed Spidey and Morbius duking it out, and at one point Morbius even bites Spider-Man and starts to drain his blood out. And then you have some random thing with, like, a bolt of lightning hitting both of them, and all this kind of mixed together. Spidey lost his mutation and went back to, like, you know, status quo, and Morbius got cured, at least for a little while.
See, folks, a bolt of lightning, it doesn't matter if it's Marvel or DC, it flashes the whole lives, you know.
Well, here it was a bolt of lightning plus draining radioactive blood from Spider-Man. Yeah. So somehow the two of them worked like that. I'm an English major, not a science major. I can't figure that out.
And then the final episode of the season, the final nightmare, where they have the whole Neogenics thing, and Scorpion comes back, and Vulture, and all that, because this is kind of like part two of Shriek of the Vulture, but it's also the ending to season two. When Connors got hit by the Neogenic Recombinator before it exploded, I really thought that they were going to be able to, like that was going to be their way of sending the season off with, hey, he got hit with the thing, so he's cured now. No, sadly not.
Nope.
But what I do enjoy is later, as the series of Spider-Man the Animated Series progresses, they find a way to basically have him choose to be the Lizard or not. And, you know, and but that's much, much later. That's like season 4 and 5. So.
Yeah.
I've talked about my favorite episodes and least favorite episodes of season 2. What about you, favorites and least favorites?
Well, like I said, I like the X-Men two-parter. I love that that two-part, you know, that kind of the two episodes that run together where we have the Punisher, and then we also have Kraven show back up. And I liked how Kraven in the series in general ended up being more of an anti-hero than a villain.
Right, yeah.
And I kind of have to wonder, because I know at this point in time in the comics, Kraven was dead. So I kind of have to wonder, if Kraven was still alive, would the producers of the show still be able to do this?
Yeah.
You know, I kind of can't help but feel that having Kraven dead means that there's a little bit more freedom to kind of play around. But I still like that. Least favorite, there's no episode that sticks out of my mind as like, wow, I'm not that much of a fan. I do understand what you're saying about the Hydro Man episode. You know, it kind of feels like it stands off on its own.
Yeah.
Although to me, I also kind of equate that with sort of like when you have one of these big crossovers in comics. Yeah. Like, okay, like for example, let's take DC's Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Right.
It's like you have a comic that's supposed to tie into it, and all it is you have the Red Sky thing and whoever's the main character in the comic being like, whoa, that's bad. But, hell, I can't deal with that right now. I gotta deal with this. You know?
Yeah. Maybe what it is it's not that I dislike the episode itself, because eventually they do tie back to it, because we have the return of Hydro Man coming up later and all that, but it's just one of those...
Oh, boy.
I know. I mean, it starts this whole part of Mary Jane's story, but then we go into Peter's story. So what I'm saying is, maybe it's not that I dislike the episode. I dislike where the episode is placed within the season. And maybe it couldn't be helped that it had to be the third episode of season two. But if you look at, say, something like Justice League, where in season two you come off of Wild Cards parts one and two, which is the Joker episode in Vegas and all that. Between Wild Cards and Star-Crossed, you have Comfort and Joy, which is the Christmas episode. So Comfort and Joy is kind of like this calm... Everybody's kind of on Christmas vacation. And then, holy shit, here's Star-Crossed. The Targaryens are going to invade and blah, blah, blah. Boom! So that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah, a nice little chill before the big...
Yeah, exactly. And I just... Between the end of the Battle of the Insidious Six, which is part two of that story, and the beginning of the Mutant Agenda, the whole searching for a cure... I just don't think Hydro Man fits very well there. That's really my only gripe about it. The Hydro Man episode itself, I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
So... Alright, what else? I guess we should talk about some of the voice actors for this, because, oh my god, we had a bunch of awesome voice actors.
I already mentioned David. We already mentioned Rob Paulson.
Yeah.
We mentioned David. I mentioned David Warner.
Yeah.
Of course, the guest X-Men, Jennifer Hale.
Yes, absolutely. We'll talk more about her as the series goes on.
Oh, yeah.
I did not know that Aunt May's voice kind of changed over this season, I think. I think it was this season, because it might be later, because it lists under Aunt May that obviously originally it's Linda Gary, but apparently Julie Bennett took over after Linda passed away. And I would love to know where exactly that change happens. Like, I always normally will know when a voice actor, like, if for some odd reason Christopher Daniel Barnes could not be Spider-Man anymore and they brought somebody else in, I would know. You know what I mean? I would know. It's kind of like the old soap opera thing where they're like, you know, in the middle of an episode, they'll take a character and they'll have that character, that actor, walk off screen, and then the next week, the character of Todd is now being played by, and they'll insert them, you know. So I'm really wondering, and again, maybe this is something I could ask John, at what point did Julie Bennett take over as Aunt May? Other characters that showed up in season two for voice actors, you know, you got Greg Berger playing Mysterio and Kraven. So Kraven returned this season, so you got more Greg Berger for that. I did not know Lee Allen Baker was Alicia Silvermane. I did not know that at all. For those that don't know, Lee Allen Baker, she was Amy Duncan in Good Luck Charlie on Disney Channel. That's mainly where I know her from. But she also does a bunch of voice acting and a bunch of other stuff. She does the Queen Delightful in the 7D and all that. So that's very cool. I love Roscoe Lee Brown as the Kingpin still. Oh, such a good voice for that. You know, as you said, the whole, you know, guest cast thing.
Yep.
Edward Albert as Daredevil. Oh, This is before, folks. This is before Batfleck. This is before you know being blind as a bat and everything else. And come on now, it's not. In hindsight, come on now. I know Daredevil is a bad movie, but come on. At the point of 2003, it's the best they could do. For the money, it's probably the best they could do.
Okay, all right.
When it also comes to voices for guests in season two, which actually, no, I think it's season three that happened, but we'll talk about that next week. Because I just noticed that Uncle Phil is in this series.
Yep.
Talk about that later.
Yep.
What I loved about, well, like I said, the Tablet of Time episode, the one thing I really loved is how they did old Peter. They kind of made him look like a much older version of himself, but at the same time, they kind of did an Uncle Ben homage a little bit, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
And I thought that was damn good. I thought that was absolutely great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Although man, running into old man Peter running into Aunt May, we almost got into some Back to the Future territory here.
No. No, because Aunt May was not, you know, falling head over heels. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Aunt May wasn't, you know... No. There's no almost back to... No. Bad, Eduardo. What the hell is wrong with you?
Oh my God. I think I broke your brain.
It's kind of like drinking a Slurpee. Oh, this tastes good. Drinking it too fast. Ow. Why did I do that? Oh, let me take another friggin' sip. Oh, God. Okay, on that note, folks, we need to take a break and do some ads and some other audio. We'll come back to close the show after this because, holy crap, I don't even know where to go. We'll be back after this.
He needs to go bleach his brain.
Thank you for calling P-Harmony, the service that matches you with the podcast that best fits your interests and needs.
I really hope you could help me because I have had no luck finding the perfect movie podcast that gives me everything that I want.
Well, that's my job. What are you looking for in a podcast?
Well, it needs to be a movie podcast that covers old and new stuff, one that reviews movies but also talks about movie news, discusses new trailers, and is willing just to have fun with some crazy movie games. Maybe even, you know, like the occasional top 10 countdown. Oh, and it's got to be a podcast that is willing at times to delve deep into the careers of notable directors and will speak to all movie fans, from the general audience to the hardcore cinephile.
Wow, well, that's quite a resume you're looking for. What are you thinking regarding schedule? Monthly, weekly, daily?
Weekly, of course.
All right, well, let me crunch these numbers in our patented podcast matrix to see what I can find for you. Wow, I don't believe it.
What is it?
We actually found the perfect match. This almost never happens.
Really? Well, dreams do come true. What is it?
It is the Cinema Geeks podcast, of course.
Well, that sounds perfect, but where can I hook up with such an awesome podcast?
Well, you can find it weekly on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or GeekCastReader.com.
Awesome. Podcast marathon, here I come.
Another satisfied customer brought to you by P-Harmony and the folks over at the Cinema Geeks podcast.
Kid. Yes. Shut up.
Beyond the Night is the GCRN's latest review podcast. We are covering everything in the Knight Rider television universe. From the classic 80s TV series to the 1991 reunion film, Team Knight Rider, and the 2008 relaunch series as well. So join TFG and Mike and Dion the Music Man as they go in-depth in Beyond the Night, only on Geekcast Radio Network. You can find Beyond the Night in iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com.
Kit.
Yes, Michael.
Just keep driving.
We brought the entire convention center to the brink of an inter-genre geek war.
Okay, Michael, if we're going to tackle this podcast thing, we've got to do something really special. It has to be cool, daily, in audio form, and undetectable by radar. Something that screams summer. I know, let's do a Phineas and Ferb review podcast. We'll call it the Podcast Organization Without a Cool Acronym, or POWCA for short. What do you think?
I think if we're not careful, Candace is going to bust us.
You can find Palka on the Geekcast Radio Network, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and all of the other methods you find podcasts.
We'll give you the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge.
Lousy luck.
We are back, folks, and we're just going to ignore everything in the last 5 minutes or so that was said. Because, yeah, no, that's just evil and wrong. It's just sick and wrong. One thing we didn't... Stop it! The one thing we didn't really get to talk about is the animation style still, and some of the music. And one of the things I would love to see released for this, and I don't think it'll ever happen, because it's Disney and Marvel, and I know my buddy, and I'm going to mention him by name because he keeps bitching about it, and I don't mean to say this against him, but every time I post anything about this series or X-Men or whatever... Specifically this series, he's like, oh, I wish Disney would release it on DVD. It's on Hulu. Just watch it there. You know, I mean, it's like, I get it. You want to have a DVD collection, but this is 2000. This is 2017, damn it. Physical media is all but dead.
I can actually understand a little bit of your friend's frustrations, because it would be cool to have the whole set, because it's not just watching it. One of the great things about DVDs is you have interviews and whatnot, and it would be kind of cool to
see. The funny thing is, this is a Disney thing now, and it was a Disney thing with the X-Men, because the X-Men stuff came out, all five seasons or whatever the X-Men. I know that the 92 X-Men series came out on DVD from Disney. There were no features on it. It was just the episodes. There was nothing. It was bare bones. No bonus features, no nothing. Yeah. So I'm betting if Disney ever put John Semper Jr.'s Spider-Man series on DVD, they would do the same goddamn thing, because it's Disney, and they don't really give a crap.
Well, we might have an ease. Okay, since Disney and Sony kind of cut a deal, you know, and they can share Spider-Man, it might be easier to bring like a DVD set for the 94 Spider-Man with some special features. I think the X-Men has always been under kind of Fox's little umbrella. Disney somehow got the cartoon rights, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the fact that Fox is keeping a tight leash on the mutant world would contribute to why the X-Men DVDs were just like, okay, here are the episodes, you know. Here's the cartoon, you know. Just here, take it.
What I would love, though, for this series, I would love La La Land Records. I know there are other soundtrack companies out there. There's Entrada and a few others. That's fine. But I have been working with La La Land Records since 2013. They put out amazing soundtrack score releases. I want a soundtrack score to this series on CD. Because, oh my God, I would just love to have the background music from this series it's a separate thing. No audio, no sound effects, no voice. Just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Especially that orchestral version of the opening theme that they kind of use for transitions and episode endings and whatnot. That would be just so awesome. I think I'd put it as a ringtone on my phone.
Oh, absolutely.
And then blast it when I walk into a room.
Absolutely. Like I said, the animation here, it's still the classic animation for the series. I still sometimes have a problem going between the 2D and the 3D web swinging. It's not bad. I don't hate it, but I noticed it a little bit more watching season 2 again and watching season 3, which we'll, as I said, talk about next week. But the animation style is what it is. You know, it's 20-something years old. There's nothing we can do about it now, but it does. I love seeing the 3D web swinging, but I think my issue comes in where they transition into and out of the 3D web swinging. Sometimes it's almost like a hard fade or, a hard stop kind of thing, or it doesn't flow very well, at least in my personal opinion, going between the two styles. So, anything else you want to say about season 2 before we get out of here?
Nope. I think I've said my piece.
All right. Season 3 is going to be up tomorrow, folks. Yes, that's right. February is kind of turned into superhero month here at Tooncast Beyond.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yes, there's anything wrong with that. So we're going to talk about Season 3 next time. What have you got going on for yourself these days? What's 2017? What kind of projects you got coming up?
Well, one thing I can talk about, I mean, in addition to on occasion coming into this show, I'm also a part of the website and live radio show Let's Be Reals.
Awesome.
I'm kind of their go-to comic guy, and I write a lot of the articles for the website. You know, it's a cool thing, and you know, you guys should definitely check it out. It's www.letsbereals.com, and then they also have a Facebook page. But you know, come check us out. We're dealing with all things geek, gaming, TV, movies, comics.
Awesome.
And I still have a couple of things going on that I can't talk about. I'm kind of under orders not to say anything. But if anybody wants to meet me like in the flesh, I'll be at Gallifrey One, which would be the weekend after Valentine's Day.
Awesome.
I mean, I'll just be there. I'll just be there to enjoy the con. But
there you go.
You know, if you should, if you swing by Facebook, see what I look like, and then just be like, oh yeah, I think I know that guy. Come on. Heard him on Tooncast Beyond. That's the Let's Be Reals guy. You know, don't hesitate. But you know, if I look like I'm trying to have a good time with the fiance, then you know,
hesitate.
Not hesitate, but use discretion. Okay.
Yeah. Come
on, use discretion. Okay. If you look like we're trying to have some alone time, you know. Come on.
All you got to do, folks, is if they look like they're busy, just go up, you know, go pass by them, give them the live long and prosper sign, and just walk away.
There you go. That'll work.
You can find me on Twitter at TFG and Mike. You can follow at Tooncast Beyond. It's at Tooncast Beyond. Follow at Geekcast Radio for all the other network updates. What is your Twitter?
My Twitter, it's, if you say it out loud, it's White Balloon King, but all one word, but I had to take out the I, the E in white, and the A and O in balloon because, well, Twitter only gives me so much room to write up a Twitter handle. So, but yeah, just look for WHTBLLNKING.
Awesome. As always, you can catch us on geekcastradio.com. You can also check us out over at thisweekingeek.net as well, because we're going to be syndicating Tooncast Beyond over there. So that's going to be some fun times. The This Week in Geek syndication will probably be 2 or 3 weeks after the Geekcast Radio main posting. So if you're checking us out at either place, hello, This Week in Geek listeners. I will do a proper introduction to Twig at some point. Probably the next episode we record. Beyond good, beyond evil, we are Tooncast Beyond, and we're beyond your wildest imagination. We will catch you next time.
Penny for your thoughts, Spider-Man. I mean you no harm. I just want to talk.
I've heard all I want to hear from you X-people. Excuse me.